welcome everyone. Councilmember Abdi is not here tonight, so it'll be myself, Councilmember Tom McLeod, and Councilmember Tosh Sharp for this committee. And this is the October 23rd Community Service and Safety Committee. Just real quick, any introductions here? We have a new person with us. Want to find out who's with us here?
Yeah, so Eric Drever, Chief of Police for our community's police department, and we have two guests joining us this evening, one online and one with us. With us, we have Barbara Wu, who is a part of our volunteer hiring panel that sit in on our hiring process when it comes to the final decision making. And we have Sally Blake, who also sits in on our hiring, who is with us online.
Okay. Great. I sent them both, so happy to have you with us. Yeah. We'll go ahead and get started. Our first item up is a contract for an investment grade audit for the Tukwila Community Center HVAC replacement project. I'm going to turn it over to David Rosen and let me take it forward.
No, I'll actually turn it over to Pete Mayer, the introduction for the item.
Okay, well done.
Well, thank you.
Good evening, Council. Nice to join you. Pete Mayer, Acting Deputy City Administrator and Director of Parks and Recreation for the city. We have before you a request and authorization to move forward an investment grade audit proposal by McKinstry. And we have, as you I think have been aware, we've been engaged in some preliminary work to ascertain the condition of the heating, ventilation, air conditioning system at the Tukwila Community Center. And through some initial assessment work that the city engaged McKinstry in after an RFQ process, we've come to better understand some of the options that might be available to the city in terms of repairing, replacing that system. As part of that process, we have also been able to explore and engage the state of Washington through a procurement process around energy services, energy service companies. And you have previously authorized and the council approved an umbrella arrangement with the state to enable us as a city to engage various providers over time as the city may need to in conducting work for the city using this energy service company arrangement. So this is the first occasion for us to use this particular instrument with this new agreement in place. The city has previously used an ESCO process several years ago with the Tukwila pool, as we understand it. So the city has some experience working with ESCOs. So we have joining us today is Shelby Sawyers from McKinstry. She's our project lead, and she and her team have been working to date to help better define and understand the conditions of the HVAC system at TCC and have delivered forward this body of work that now we're prepared to engage in, which is a investment grade audit, and she'll walk you through the components of that. And we are specifically analyzing two different options. They've been laid out in the staff report for you, and there's some pros and cons between the two items, in addition to some additional costs or cost differentiation between option one, option two. But there's some operating and upfront cost pros and cons with either option that she'll briefly highlight. So without taking much more airtime, I'll turn it over to Shelby, and she'll walk you through, give you a brief presentation of the work that we're proposing to do at this stage, and what that will prepare us for in subsequent stages. And David will be, I think, possibly navigating the slide set. So Shelby, take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Pete, and hello, Council. Thank you for having me tonight. Really excited to come chat with you all. I've been working pretty closely with the city staff and the folks that run the facility at the community center. So excited to dig in. All right. So go to the next slide. Nice. Thank you. So you've probably seen this in your council packets, but big picture, we're here to ask you for authorization to advance our study at the community center. As Pete mentioned, we've looked at several systems there, and we've narrowed it down to two options that we think we'd recommend are the most feasible, and we'll dig into that here in a moment. But I also think you all probably know this. You probably know the space. It's super important to your city. It's a really highly utilized space. And the existing heating, ventilation, air conditioning, it's at end of useful life. There's no cooling currently in the gymnasium at all, and the city is likely going to be facing some pretty serious challenges going forward, just keeping the space operational and functioning optimally for the users. So just kind of setting the stage, that's what we're working with and why we're wanting to make a change. David, if we want to go to the next slide. So as I mentioned, we're looking to advance the development on two of the most feasible options. And just to be clear, we're not asking you to pick one of these now. We're just looking, again, for that authorization to proceed with the study to further vet these two options to make sure we're getting you the right solution for the space and for the long term of the city. So the outcome of that will be our recommendation, and it'll be a highly iterative process. Like I mentioned, we've been working very closely with the city staff and facility staff, and they've also been really great to work with and asking, you know, all the right questions to make sure we're getting down to the nitty gritty. And just by the way, the study cost would roll into the total value that you see here on the screen. So just at a high level, there's two different technologies here. Both are going to add cooling. But the first would be a like-for-like replacement, and the other is a heat pump system. So if things stay the way they are, it would likely be most cost-effective to go with the like-for-like system. You're going to be getting, you know, not expending a lot of expense, and it's definitely going to meet the city's needs. The second option is a different technology. Big picture, it's probably a little more efficient, and what we would say is a better total solution when you're looking across the board. But as you can see, there is a cost premium associated with that. And in the absence of additional funding or incentives, we recognize that definitely makes it less attractive. So if there are updates to the incentives, which we have some insights that there may be some rolling out in early 2024, it may make this a more attractive option. So that's why we're recommending to keep both on the table. And just also worth noting, you can see on the screen there, both comply with energy codes, you know, there's the associated pros and cons with each. David, if we want to roll to the next slide. Thanks. And so as we've mentioned, advancing the study is the next step, the most imminent step that we're the most focused on at this stage. And chatting with the city staff, we just kind of wanted to make sure you would also know what we'd be doing as part of that development and what you would be getting at the end of that study. So you can see that shown here on the screen. David, we can probably go ahead and roll into the next slide. And so we also wanted to make sure we set the tone for when you'd be expecting to hear back with us, what those milestones would look like as we worked through this development, and what you could expect for a really realistic look at what this effort is going to take to get to that final state. So shown here is an outline of the anticipated timeline. And just by the way, you know, one thing shown here is those two different construction windows. And just to clarify, this is due to the lead time for the chiller equipment, so for the cooling system. And then there's also some optimal times for install for those different components of the HVAC system. So that's taken into consideration as well. All right, David, and last slide. Thank you. So like I mentioned, you know, just kind of trying to keep it short and sweet, not for now, and then we'll dig into what you're wanting to chat about. But we're looking to keep going and making sure we're staying productive and helping the city get to that end state where the space is going to not be at risk. So the next steps would be the authorization to proceed with the study and approving that IGA proposal that Pete explained. I wanted to be respectful and get you the information you need. So I'd love to dig in and hear what questions you have and what else you might like to talk about.
Thanks, Shelby. And maybe before we turn it back over to the acting chair, could you just maybe briefly highlight the city engaged you in some preliminary work after a competitive process to do an initial assessment, and what's before the council is this investment grade audit that will help further inform the two options for which the city would be in a position to select one to then proceed from there. Can you maybe just help the committee appreciate the difference between the initial assessment and what this audit will produce for the city?
Totally. And that's a really great point. Thanks, Pete. So initially we replied and were selected to do an initial concept study, and we looked at a bunch of different options, upwards of 10. Again, it was a very iterative process, looking at the space, collecting information, doing site walks, chatting with Cody and Henry and the folks who are tasked with running the space daily and what challenges they're facing. And out of that, we further narrowed it down to the most feasible four options and the most feasible three options. And then when the costing came into play and looking what the city would be most likely to take on, we reached these last two options. So that was that. You can, if you want to think of it as a pre-design study, it was reaching this point. And so now we're looking to advance the design of those two options.
Thank you, Shelby. Mm-hmm. Okay, Tom, Councilmember McLeod, back to you.
All right, thank you. And thank you for that presentation. Councilmember Sharp, I'll let you start with any questions or comments that you have.
Sure. Phase three. So am I right? Is the difference in cost essentially, because you give me a range on the full cost, which is 3 million to 3.8, 4.2 to 5.6. I'm just going to imagine that it's going to be 3.86 to get option A and 5.6 to get option B. So it's about a million and a half or so difference between the two systems. Is that right?
Yeah. That's a fair way to look at it.
Okay. And then it says annual electric savings. These are what each system will save. So option A, if I'm reading it right, will save 109,000 kilowatts versus the 54,000 kilowatts. Am I reading the chart right? I just want to make sure that's how that works.
Yeah, correct. That would be annually.
And then what is the annual utility cost savings? It looks like they're about the same. What is that cost? What does that mean?
Yeah, so you're looking at the same table. It's orange.
Yeah, it says,
is that the one you're looking
24,000
at?
24,000 for each cost, utility cost savings based on what? What is that savings?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, with the two different systems, they're utilizing different types of technology. So with the like-for-like, you're more reliant on the boiler for heating. With the air source heat pump, you're going to be more reliant on that air source heat pump. So you can kind of see those two different lines. For one, with the like for like, you're going to be realizing more electric savings, whereas the air source heat pump is going to be utilized more electricity. But on the flip side, you're going to be using a lot less natural gas with that second option. And so tabulating that, what the city would be spending on both of those systems compared to what your current system is utilizing, that would be the annual savings.
Okay. So whether I go with option A, not me personally, the city decides to go with A or B, the savings is going to be the same, whether they spend 3.86 million on option A or option B, which is 5.626 million, the same cost savings can be realized regardless of which option we use, A or B. Is that right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
I do.
No. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I do think it's worth noting there's other added benefits as well. If you're looking at, what type of fuel source you're utilizing, ease of accessibility. But looking at the dollars, that's correct.
Okay. Is there a lifespan difference between option A and B equipment? One lasts longer than the other?
Yeah, there is, and I apologize. I don't have that right at my fingertips, but I probably can here in a second.
No, you know what? As long as that information makes it out by the time you make this proposal again on Google it. So I'm not going to have you search through it because it's plenty on the spot.
Okay, yeah. I'd be happy to follow up with that too. I should have brought my engineer with me, but I could get that to city staff if that'd be helpful.
It would be. Are there examples of Well, I guess A is similar to what we have, but is there examples of B, that HVAC system in buildings that folks could look at or ask about as far as the one you want to put in that? And ultimately, if we go with option B, is there an example of that anywhere that we could look at?
Yeah, definitely. Industry-wide, I'd say that's a pretty highly emerging trend of folks shifting to that type of system. So we could easily set up site walks or interviews. If there's interest in having the facility staff, you know, chat with someone who uses that type of system and learn the pain points. But it's a pretty, I would say, highly utilized system type that wouldn't be hard to find that.
Okay. And then how long has been B option been in existence? Do we know? Like how long they've been using, like how long have you had this piece of equipment available for people to use and look at?
Just within the industry?
Yes.
Yeah, you
like
know, again,
a relatively 6 months thing, or has it been around for a couple of years thing?
Yeah, I can get you that exact information as well. It's not the 6 month. I would say it's on the longer end of the spectrum, upwards, I would say maybe 5 to 10 years if I were to just take an initial guess, but that's something I could definitely follow up with.
Okay. And then the other thing I'm curious about is which one costs more to service? So since you have 5 to 10 years of both of these pieces of equipment being utilized, it'd be helpful to know which one will cost the city more to maintain if there's a broken part or something like that. I know you don't have that, but I'm going to ask that question again when you come back around.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is cost savings over time. You mentioned that this thing, the second one, the B option, uses two different energies or one more or less than the other. Well, that would be nice if there is actual savings over time. So if that item, this piece of equipment has been in use for 6 years, what is the trend as far as savings that's implied by the document? So that when folks decide on which one to get, if after 5 years, if this one costs more to service and you don't see a sizable difference in savings, it's going to be something that we would have to consider. That would be helpful.
Yeah, I can definitely get that for you as well. I will also say with the two fuel sources, kind of like we're talking about, whether it's electric or natural gas, I will say industry-wide, we're seeing a trend towards more electrification. I'm sure this probably isn't news for your team. But so we would potentially anticipate to see that reflected as well in the utility costs. It's a bit hypothetical at this stage, but that based on what we've been seeing, I would expect that to be an industry trend. So that's something we could get some harder numbers on for you as well.
Perfect. And then as far as this equipment, we're going to get, did we have a company identified that's going to install this service at all, or we're not there yet?
Yeah, we're not there yet. Just trying to not put the cart before the horse.
Okay.
I will say with this contracting mechanism, we have a lot of flexibility. So if it's expertise driven or lowest cost driven, you know, that's again where it'd be a very iterative and collaborative process with the city, finding the right contractor that your team, our team feels comfortable with and, you know, is the right price.
Okay. Well, that leads me to the other question, which is how many people or companies can service this piece of equipment? I would hate to be stuck having one company we can lean on to fix this piece of equipment if it goes bad. If it's beyond our staff's ability to service, is there limitations on if they can service the whole thing from start to finish, or can we get multiple vendors as far as servicing this piece of equipment? That's my question.
Yeah, there'd be multiple vendors. It's a highly utilized technology. It's not, I keep using the word technology, which I think makes it sound very complex. It's just another type of mechanical system.
I wouldn't have any
concerns there.
The last one is between A and B, is there a warranty between them? Is one longer than the other? Is there a warranty? I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah, I think the only difference would be this may be, again, cart before the horse a teeny bit, just looking at the equipment vendor specifically. So when we got to that point when we would be selecting who would be providing the equipment, that's something we would look at if someone had a longer, you know, 5 to 10 year warranty versus someone had a 1 to 3 year warranty. That's something we would have control over helping negotiate and solidify as well.
Thank you.
If I may, Councilman.
Yes.
So option A is using natural gas and boilers, and the heated air goes through your vents. So it uses natural gas and electricity. Option B is a heat pump. So you basically will drill into the ground. So thermal heat comes from the ground that's used instead of the natural gas. It's mostly electric.
Okay.
So that's a different.
All right. Thank you, Marty. That's all right.
Okay. Thank you. Those are some good questions. I have a couple. The $84,000 that pays for the audit, is that included in the full cost? I don't know who can answer that one.
Yeah. Correct. That would roll into numbers we were just looking at for the total project cost. That would be rolled up into that total cost.
So we would add it to the numbers I'm looking at?
No, it's included. It's included.
Okay.
And council member, just for so we're transparent on all of this, should the city not proceed with either option, the city is obligated to convey that $84,000 from its resources. So, but assuming we go forward with one of those options, it's reflected in the estimates that you see there as part of the total project cost.
Okay. As an accountant, the numbers that mean the most to me have the dollar signs in front of them. But I see a bunch of other numbers here, CO2 savings and electric savings. I'm gathering that option B is the smaller carbon footprint.
Correct.
Okay. Is that a lot of difference between 107 and 112 metric tons? Is that a big difference?
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to figure out how to quantify that, but I mean, the short answer I would say is yes.
It's significant.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it'd be helpful, I have some ways to, I could translate that to, you know, number of cars on the road or number of trees not cut down, if that'd be helpful.
That might be happen. That might be helpful. So same with the therms and the kilowatt. Yeah, I don't deal with those numbers a lot. So when you throw them at me and they don't have dollar signs in front of them, I'm scratching my head a little bit as to what does that really mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and, you know, maybe I'll just make a comment as someone who's, you know, been in this industry a while. I do think between the two options, to the point you're making, like, those numbers are actually pretty darn close. And the biggest difference is in that cost. And so that's where looking at if there's a smaller carbon footprint with option B, I think the real interesting piece that will be cool to see is at the turn of the year, if you may have heard of the Inflation Reduction Act or ITC, they may be rolling out some updates where that type of system would be eligible for tax credits. So that's upwards of 30 to 40% of the total project cost. That would be a tax rebate to the city. So that's where it could become more attractive, and it might make more dollar sense between the two, and they'd get even closer in comparison.
Okay, you're talking my language now with tax credits, so thank you for that. That would be helpful to have a little bit of that information.
Yes. Yeah, so unfortunately, you know, we're kind of at the mercy of the Department of Commerce. It's up to them, and we're also waiting with bated breath to see what decisions they're going to make and what they're going to roll out. So that's something we're closely tracking.
But just so the council members, the industry trend is going towards less carbon footprint. So the Department of Commerce and the feds encourages nudge people to go towards that. However, we're all stuck with the basic issue of money. So right now, there is incentive, but there's significant upfront dollar cost difference.
Well, as Tasha pointed out, $1.5 million, that's a pretty big difference.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'd be very interested if on the back side there were tax credits that could help the city out.
Yeah.
There are,
yeah.
Like Ms. Sires is mentioning, is that it's not enough to cover and close the gap.
It's not $1.5 million worth.
Right.
Okay. I understand. $600,000, but still,
yeah,
it'd be a nice number.
Yeah, okay, I guess.
Go ahead.
Well, I get the only other piece I might add to your point of the industry trend is trending towards, you know, carbon reduction, smaller carbon footprints. We're also seeing a lot of grants and other types of funding rolling out around that. So that's the other piece why we just think it's interesting enough. And there is maybe some potential to where that gap could be closed. So that's why our recommendation is that both options, you know, we continue looking at both. So when the time comes, we have a bit more information, the city can make the best decision.
Okay. On the page that compared the metrics with option A and option B, you said you had quite a few options that you started with and you mm-hmm. worked your way down to option A and B. What was a couple that you discarded, like option C and D, that didn't make the chart? What was a couple you threw away?
Yeah, let's see. So we looked at four-pipe fan coils, heat recovery hydronic heat pumps, two-pipe hydronic heat pumps, four-pipe ground source heat pumps. You know, these, there are a lot of kind of like similar words, but they're just different system configurations. And some of the constraints are, okay, so it looked like the community center was pretty low on the water table, so maybe drilling underground likely might not make sense. So we kind of did what we call a fast fail, again, just due to a lot of those different types of factors. So looking at, it's like, well, doing core drilling, studying, looking at the water table, you're upwards of 7 million. It's like, okay, we already know that that isn't feasible. So we looked at, I would say, upwards of 10 different things and ruled them out based on a number of those types of criteria.
Okay. On the timeline, mm-hmm. you have a wrong date. On the third line down, is that the right year for 5/6/23, or should that be 24?
That should be a 24. Thank you. Unless you have a time machine, we'll hop in with you.
The thought goes right there in work. So I don't think I have any more questions. I'll ask Councilmember Sharp, are you in favor of the study continuing?
Yeah, I have one question.
Oh, absolutely.
What's the lifespan of a building? Meaning, is there a lifespan to buildings before they're deemed?
Yeah, usually 20 to 30 years. So the brand new is 30 years, and barring some new technology for windows and stuff, usually the lifespan.
Okay, so where are we at TCC? How much life is left in that building? About.
Our intention is to keep the building. That's one of the buildings that we want to keep. And I think Mr. Klein knows when it was built.
TCC was constructed in 1997 or 96. Started operations around there, 97. So we're at 25 years.
Okay. Right now. So there's, I mean, the idea being, the reason for the question is, if there is any talk at all about redoing that building, it would matter. Because I don't think you can rip off the equipment and then put it on the new one. It'll probably need a new one. Spending the extra money on the fancy equipment on a building that's scheduled to be replaced in 10 or 15 years may not be the most prudent thing. So having that, what the city's plan is on the long-term plan on that building would be helpful as far as making a decision. So I don't know what the long-term plan is as far as keeping that building as is and then just kind of piecing it back together after you're into the span.
Apologize, I had to take a phone call. The current plan, the last council adopted policy that we did was back in 2015 about facilities in general. TCC was seen as a priority building similar to City Hall, and the key things were that it needed to be upgraded for earthquake safety. That was the main things. I don't know if that would impact any of this HVAC. It's mainly just to make sure that things are, since 1997, earthquake codes have improved. And so a lot of it is just kind of securing a lot of the loads at the roof and other things like that. I don't believe that would impact. I don't know. I'm not an engineer. But a lot of the maintenance, we just replaced and improved the roofing and siding. We approved that just this last year to extend the life of the community center. And the part to do earthquake safety is it's currently on paper as a emergency shelter. And we probably could do that as long as it wasn't an earthquake emergency. But it's been used for that during the fire just up here on the hill. It was an emergency shelter for about a day and a half. So right now, I would say that there's no current plans to abandon or replace that building. It is really just to maintain it and upgrade it.
Okay. If that's part of the presentation later, as far as making the, some folks might want that new one, mm-hmm. right? But if the building's only 10 years or something, it might be a stretch. So if that's in there, like the city is planning on keeping that building for the next 30 years, I think you could get people behind spending the extra, maybe expending, considering spending the extra money on a new thing. So that's all I have.
Okay, well, the ask of us is that we forward this to the 11:15 COW meeting and then to 11:20 regular meeting consent.
Yes.
I'm okay with that as well.
Yes.
So we're both in favor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
I move to our next item, and that will be with the Chief of Police and the Pepperell Police Department's third quarter report. Weaver, take it away.
Share my screen. There we go. First of all, Eric Weaver, Chief of Police for our Community Police Department. Looking at the third quarter report, we had a number of things going on. A lot of them, it was staffing changes. So we hired on a new record specialist, Kevin Allegray, and we still have one specialist position open. We have the civil service process going right now and finalizing with chief's interviews next week to backfill that last slot for our record specialist. We hired on our second co-responder for the department, contracting through Sound Health. They started in the middle of September, and now we have both of them trained up and working opposing 10-hour schedules. So one works Sunday through Wednesday, the other works Wednesday through Saturday, noon to 10, I think it is. So we've got the coverage for every single day now with those two, and seeing what we can do to keep the program going and evolve it. Right now, we're covering the majority of the funds with grants that we've received. We did receive a grant that was brought before the council 2 months ago. I apologize, I don't remember the date. That was a grant to help cover the costs of co-responder, which will cover part of the second co-responder. Any funding that isn't covered, we are going back to the original thought process on utilizing seizure funds in order to cover it as a bridge during this current budget cycle to get us to the 25-26 budget cycle.
Is there an allocation in that budget cycle?
I'm sorry?
Is there an allocation in that budget cycle? They didn't know what to say.
There is no allocation at this time. We would be coming and making an ask for that allocation pending us doing research and seeing if there are other funding sources. The state is currently talking about providing through legislative act, but the potential for funding. So we'd be looking at seeing if we qualify, should that be brought before the state legislature. We won't know more until we get into the next session. New canine, German Shepherd Raider, which is a tracking canine. Apollo is retiring at the end of the year, and so we're in transition position right now from retiring Apollo as in the next month or two. As this new canine comes on, this is not a drug dog, this is a tracking dog. Officer Josh Rivett is the trainer, and both Officer Rivett and Raider are currently going through the training so that we have that resource for the department, and hopefully another rock star canine PR for the department, because Apollo right now is, for all lack of better terms, our department mascot. So
the name of the dog is Raider?
Raider.
Okay.
The officer is a fan of the LA or
well, Las Vegas. It was Oakland Raiders, but now it's Las Vegas.
Yeah,
Raiders.
So
that's what the name comes from. Yes. Yeah. He is a diehard Raider fan. Yeah. So I'll hold it against him.
During this this the third quarter, we had a sergeant promotion. Do you know Officer Matt Valdez? We just introduced him at council last Monday night as part of the swearing in of his rank. We're really, really happy with the work that he's taking to it, like fish in the water. So we're excited to see where his career goes on this new leadership position for us, as well as we're continuing our drive for staffing for commissioned officers. Currently, even though this is a third quarter report, currently we're sitting at two budgeted position openings with only three in background, and we have those just about finishing, and they all look good. So it looks like we're getting them all through the background process. We have four in the academy right now, one that just graduated the academy, and three that are pending start, with one that started today. So we have all these new officers over the next 3 to 8 months that are going to start supplementing deployable officers, the first of which come February into March. We should be looking at the first round of officers coming off of field training and being able to supplement our staffing so that we can start backfilling those specialties. The next round you'll see is, and at that, about that same time, you'll see the four that are in the academy coming out of the academy, combined with some of our laterals that we have in the process. You're then looking like another five or six that will be added and deployable for us to backfill our specialties again just about the beginning of summer. So as we pull into the new year, we're going to start seeing the benefit of newly deployable resources. During the quarter, we also had recognition. Ryota Akimoto was recognized by the Tukula Masons Lodge for Outstanding Police Officer of the Year and for his service to the community. We also had Officer Denny Delick and Jermaine Castello recognized as our employees of the first quarter during that quarter, as well as there was an appreciation ceremony for Apollo from the United States Postal Service and the work that they did. During the time frame, he has recovered for the federal government and for state roughly $5 million in narcotics-related funds. So huge, huge service. He went into, we deployed him in the field in the fall of 2016. And so here we are, seven years later, and that money, or those, the drug recoveries and the money recovery is over that 7 year period. Continued our community engagement through a homeless camp response. We've worked very closely with the Salvation Army and trying to provide resources to those in our community that are homeless. We see a lot of individuals that are either drug dependent and or in mental crisis, in which case we try and divert them to treatment and or the resources to help them with those situations, which sometimes is just simply shelter overnight and or getting them into treatment. But it is strictly a voluntary program, so they have to accept the resources. Unfortunately, as we've discussed in the past, we find that more often than not that those resources are refused. We do give them time to try and put their things together and help them find another location. But if they refuse our resources after several attempts, we will see what we can do to move them on and hopefully find safer places than on the street to stay. But we don't allow them to stay in areas that then become public health as well as quality of life issues for the rest of our community. So we've been doing a fantastic job working with them. One of the homeless issues that we then have been dealing with since the summertime and on, which the council's been updated on, is the Riverton Church, Riverton Park United Methodist Church, and the Asylee situation there, which we are actively working to this day on trying to address and provide them with resources. Aside from our homeless engagement, we work with Night Out Against Crime. We're working on the police department's strategic plan. We continued our use of force review boards, monthly cop cab meetings, work closely with the school and the superintendent on working with building a relationship up with a new school superintendent, which also a lot of the conversations right now are revolving around the SRO program, which we'll have an update for the council tonight during special meeting as to where we are. And I'm excited that we will get to the point where we can have our school resource officers as a resource back in the school, building those relationships. We continued the use of our hiring panel and volunteers, which are here with us this evening. And in a moment, I'll have an opportunity for them to speak. I wanted to bring them back in front of you, so as we did with the use of force review panel, so that you can hear from them about their involvement in attempts for transparency and accountability for the department by including community members in our hiring process. We also met with the mall on several occasions to try and address some of their concerns. And at the beginning of September, we moved our community policing team down to the Community Resource Center, the outpost there in the mall, having them work out of there so that we can create an opportunity of presence down at the mall. They are not assigned to necessarily walk the mall, even though they do that. The intent is to have them when they are in their downtime doing paper and that to be at the mall so that people see cars down there, see uniforms down there, just as an added presence. Whereas the mall has been making requests for more bodies down there. We can't fulfill that right now. We saw this as a happy medium to be able to try and provide some sort of resource, especially with just the sheer volume of people and number of calls for service we have down there. It's important to have that presence. So we were glad we were able to partner with the mall on that. Our community engagement coordinator, Brooke, was able to put into place our Safe Place program. We sent out at the end of September here notification to the council that the program is up and running, which is an anti-hate program. So for those that are the victims of hate crimes, this provides safe places by building up partnerships with our business community. They put the signs in their shop windows, so anybody coming by can see that this is recognized as a safe place. We then train them up on what to do should somebody come in. Right now, since we just initiated the program, we only have 5 or 6 businesses on the program. However, we're trying to market and get out and talk with the businesses so that we can grow it so that there are more safe places for people to go out there, the victim of a hate crime. Community events, Coffee with a Cop, Gun Locker, Gun Lockbox giveaway, Touch Truck. We did Ballin' with Badges, where they're playing basketball and the kids were whooping the police officers behind. And then we also partnered with, the Affluent Barber Shop on the Parkway, where they gave haircuts, free haircuts to kids before going back to school. They had police officers there handing out gift bags and school supplies, along with they had some of the Seattle Sounders players there as well. Continued our partnerships within the region for the Valley Chiefs. I meet on a weekly basis with the local chiefs of the Valley and a monthly basis with all the King County chiefs and the sheriff, as well as we meet monthly with Valley Communications, which is our dispatch center. We had our PD Town Hall, which we meet quarterly for an opportunity for all of our department members to engage and maintain communications with our department, as well as our quarterly leadership meetings, as well as we've been having monthly PD strategic planning meetings where we are coming up on finalizing a draft for a strategic plan for the police department. Right now, we're in the middle of seeking community input regarding
the information we've put together so far, especially revolves or anything that all the stuff that revolves around changing our mission and or redefining our core values. And we're getting community input before we move on. Aside from that, one of the things that has eaten up a lot of our major crimes time was a homicide investigation where we had where back in July, officers had responded to a shooting scene on Strander Boulevard where an adult male was struck by gunfire and pronounced deceased. The suspect fled the scene. However, we were able to identify who it was and ultimately make an arrest on that. That was the lead detective on that was Detective Akimoto, who was the one who was recognized for that work by the Masons Hall. In addition to that, we've been partnering with the Valley Independent Investigation Team, partnering with them as an independent investigation team working on officer-involved shootings. The Valley Independent Investigation Team is recognized in the state as being the premier independent investigation team. We have Washington State Patrol and King County coming to us and asking for our help. There are a lot of good teams out there. Our team has a lot of experience and just sees more of that because of the area we're in. The South King County, south of I-90, down to the Pierce County border, including northern Pierce County, tends to see the majority of the types of crimes that involve officers having to get involved in use force. So the team does the most in the state. Aside from that, we continue our Flock automated license plate reader cameras. A lot of our response is officer generated to stolen vehicles that are hits with the Flock cameras, in which case we get enough hits to where we can't possibly respond to all of them. But as they come in and officers are available, we have more stolen vehicle recoveries than we have stolen vehicles related to the Flock cameras, because we know when stolen vehicles are now coming into the city thanks to these things. And they've helped us identify leads in other cases beyond just stolen vehicles. We've helped other outside agencies with their homicides related to vehicles that have traveled through our city. And we have access to other cities' Flock cameras as well. So it's been an incredible investigative tool for us. Our public disclosure requests are pretty much on par for where they've been in the past. We had 1,098 records requests, 1,049 were processed and closed. Usually there's just a little bit more inflow than outflow. Otherwise, we're still staying on top of it, but we have to redirect some of our attention to the public disclosure request to keep up to speed. That's why we have allocated one of our record specialists as the public disclosure request specialist to fill that role so that we can stay ahead of it. That's that open specialist record specialist position that we have. That position is open because of moving one of our specialists to a public disclosure request priority position. That's what they focus on. And emergency management continues to work on our COOP plan, our continuity of operations plan, which is in final draft form and should be ready here in the fourth quarter. So with that, before we get into any questions about that, I did want an opportunity to present Barbara and Sally. Let me free up my sharing of my screen. Barbara and Sally, along with Margaret Bratcher and Mikkel Rowland, are the four individuals that sit on our voluntary panel for those sitting in on our hiring process. Back in the beginning of 2022, we started utilizing community members to sit in on our chief's interview so that we have community input into who the next generation of law enforcement are that are going to be serving the Tukwila community. We were using people from our CopCab board, the Equity and Social Justice Community Board, as well as I'm trying to think where else we drew from at the time. I think once we did use somebody from our Civil Service Board. But we were using volunteers that were already in place until we could establish an actual program, which we sent out, did like a job search. We posted within the city and the city's website, and I believe in the Hazelnut, that we were looking for volunteers to sit in. And from that search, we have got the four volunteers that we have today, and all of them have sat in on multiple interviews and have been a part of the selection process as we move forward. So I wanted to introduce Barbara and Sally. And if you had any questions of them about the program, if you remember when we started up our use of force review board, the council had asked for us to bring the volunteers in so that they could talk to them about the program and find out how it was working and whether or not it actually does create any accountability or transparency in that program. I wanted to do the same for you here, in which case you have an opportunity to meet with two of them and ask them any questions you might have aside from our quarterly report. So
okay.
I give the floor back to you. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to, if Barbara and or Sally would have just a short about your experience in being on this volunteer position.
Sure. Yeah, it's been actually a very insightful and very easy process to take part in. I had wondered when I volunteered exactly how this process would work, hopeful that there would be more than one person. Turned out that there's four of us. And we receive, what happens is, in terms of the process, is we receive an email from one of two people that are involved in the hiring process in the scheduling process, asking us about our availability. So for instance, this week, there's a potential for interviews on Wednesday and or Thursday. So all of us will respond as to our availability. It does seem to be very, it just really works out that generally speaking, one or two people are available. So I would say four would be pretty much an optimal number that we're available to be in multiple interviews on multiple days, but not be overly impactful on the process. So there are a number of people that besides chief and assistant chiefs in the process. We respond. She tells us what the schedule is. We show up. The materials are there. It's been very interesting, and it's been a very hopeful process seeing all these young people, because they're all substantially younger than me, at least. I don't know about Sally and the others, but all these young people that are interested in public service and interested in working in departments throughout the valley, throughout the area. It's been, I can't speak for either of the chiefs, whether or not we're a value add to the process, but as a community member, I definitely feel that it's advantageous to have an idea of what is going on and who these people are. And frankly, when they, you know, God forbid there should be an emergency, when somebody shows up on my doorstep or a car accident or whatever, that I have a good feeling about who they are and where they, what they're bringing to Tukwila.
Yeah, thank you. Sally, you have any brief thoughts to share about the process?
Just that I thought it was an excellent idea to involve community in hiring police officers, and that's one reason I volunteered for it. I just thought it was really excellent idea to involve the community. Things have really changed since I was testing back in the day, where it was so competitive and there were thousands of candidates, whereas now it's a lot different. There's a lot lower number of candidates for these positions, as I'm sure you're aware. And it's been interesting. I've enjoyed the process.
Well, thank you both for helping in that capacity. This item is just for discussion, but I'll then turn it over to Councilmember Sharp and see what kind of questions or comments you have.
Sure. The first one is, understand what it's like to volunteer and not get paid. So it's a huge, that's huge that you four go out of your way to be there for the department. So I just want to start there, like, appreciate it. I mean, the chief's great, but having somebody that's not on the payroll in there, I'm certain that it matters because, you know, when you have folks who are familiar with each other and one guy's signing your checks, this is a different dynamic as opposed to the public being out there in those meetings, kind of watching. So you sort of, you carry yourself a little bit different when you have somebody that's not within that circle watching. So I just say thank you for that. Both of you.
Welcome.
And let the other two know that we appreciate it. I appreciate it. I can't speak for, I appreciate it. So having said that, Chief, question about that dog. The tracking dog, are those the ones that are in the cars?
Yes, they're okay. In the car with the officer.
So they're the ones, so like Apollo, see how professional he is, he's about ready for retirement in that picture, but he wouldn't be the one tooling around in the car because he does a different job. Is that what, how does that work?
So,
because he sniffs packages, but is he wouldn't be out in the car ever riding
Apollo. Apollo, when the only time he was in the car is to and from work and okay. when needing to transport to the facility where the package needs to be sit.
Okay.
Whereas this dog, the officer is an active member filling a district and or role within the patrol shift that he's assigned to. So they're actively out and about responding to calls and everything throughout the shift. Should there be a need for the resource of a dog for tracking, that's where the dog comes in as the resource.
Are we trying to get another Apollo type dog or does Raider turn into Apollo one day? How does it work?
So there's a possibility of cross training for a tracker and evidence sniffing job or dog. Right now, the focus is getting the dog trained up as a tracking dog. We could potentially look at cross training down the road, but we need to get him trained on the one thing first as we then move into the potential of training him for other things. The other opportunity is as we move into new budget cycle is to put a second dog in play as well, which we used to have two dogs at a time, but right now we're getting the program back up and running. Apollo has solely been a drug dog. We haven't had a tracking dog in several years, and it's a resource that we decided to take that path simply because of where we are in trying to apprehend criminals that are running from us and or hiding from us. And with the new laws in place, the dog is an off lead. So it's not like the dogs of old where you would let them off and they go running into the dark and tackle somebody. The dog's on lead, strictly designed for and trained for tracking and finding the individual for the officers to then engage, unless there's opportunity or something happens where, for safety reasons, they do have to release the dog. More often than not, they're going to be on lead the entire time.
Okay. Well, does the city get a percentage of that, what Apollo found?
We have. I'd have to go and get the actual number associated with that, but I believe we're somewhere in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So it would seem to me that we need three dogs, another tracking dog, and then another Apollo who can't be replaced clearly, but I mean, some dog to
continue the
yeah, because that's a lot of money. That's about $1 million a year that dog is, you know, gotten off of, out of criminal element. So that's a good thing. Like he got an award. I mean, besides the little plaque, did he get like Wet Dog Food for Life or something? Or what did he get? A pet for life?
He got a plaque and lots of belly rubs.
Okay. Well, nice work. And tell me about the high school internship that you have right now.
So during the summer, Charlie Sabring was our intern. She worked with our community engagement coordinator. It's a short term from the summer. She worked with us from end of June, end of school year, I think, or beginning of July, up to mid-August.
where she would help out with just about everything community engagement related, working with the community engagement coordinator. Interesting note in this particular situation, Charlie also was our student representative on our community-oriented policing citizen advisory board. And I want to make sure I point out she had no upper hand in the process. She competed against, I think it was 18 other students to get the position, and she got it all on her own. She's truly a stellar addition and community member and student. I believe she's Texas.
She's at a university in Texas.
Yeah, I can't remember. She's gone to University of Texas, and when she's done, she wants to come back and work for the Tacoma Police Department.
Nice work. I'm glad you're having meetings with them all. I did peek my head into that your facility there a while back. I just remember it was sort of scuffed up and kind of like used looking.
It's been refurbished.
Oh, good. Just my wife had a comment. I was like, well, let me see if I can talk. Yeah. Okay. So public disclosure request. How long does it take for the average ballpark? So I put in a request, not that I'm looking to do that. I'm just saying if a citizen wanted to put in a request, how long does it take for you to fill that request on average?
Most of them are quick turnaround. I don't have a specific time. What bogs down the time of trying to fulfill a request are those that involve our body-worn cameras or our car cameras. Because any video that is potentially released has to be viewed and potentially redacted and or provided an exemption as to why we shouldn't release it before we release it. And we have to look at every second of it. You have to have somebody sit and watch the footage, in which case, if you have hours of footage for a single public disclosure request, somebody's literally sitting there for hours on end watching and redacting and addressing the video so that we can release it. And that's where the time frame comes down. Usually, there's about a 3-week turnaround on the more complicated public disclosure requests, really complicated ones that have lots of hours of video coverage, could take multiple installments and could take months to potentially provide, depending upon the amount of man hours or labor hours that we would need to put into the whole review and redaction process.
And then the last question is for our guests. If there's one thing that they could do, that the city could do to make it better, is there anything you can think of now that, because I can ask the question, you may not feel comfortable asking, is there anything they can do to better the process as far as to making your job involved in the whole process better? Can you think of anything?
In terms of the process of
participating
on the panel?
Yeah.
Actually, they've made it so easy. And I have to say, my background, you don't know anything about me. Tom knows a little bit about me, but I worked for Amtrak for 35 years, the last 16 of which were as a recruiter or a human resources person, full cycle human resources person. So participating in the interview process in this capacity is so fun. So fun. I would almost pay to do it because it is super fun. These guys don't think it's quite as fun as I do, but I don't know how Sally feels. But
We have our moments. You remember there were tears at one.
Oh, I know. He was crying. He was made the job offer. It was so sweet. But no, it's the folks that put out the information to figure out the scheduling. You know, it's the challenge, the great challenge that I see that I had been completely unaware of is, and Sally had kind of alluded to it, that the process over the last number of years has changed, partly in terms of things that we've seen in the press about policing, and some of it is just baby boomers retiring and younger people not necessarily going into service work to the degree that perhaps they did earlier. But as the chief has mentioned previously, when he applied for jobs, 1,000 people applied for a handful of positions. And now we have a handful of positions and we'll have 4 people that make it all the way through the process because the process is pretty rigorous to get to the chief's interviews. And so this whole year, there have been vacancies because rather than put the wrong person into a position, it's better to leave the position open until the right person comes along. And so I think everybody's done a good job. Most of the people that get as far as the chief's interviews, it's really, they have skill sets that fit, but they perhaps don't fit Tukwila. And I think we all recognize that Tukwila is a very special place in a lot of different ways, some good, some bad, but very special. And that is what I have seen over and over. What could they do better? I really couldn't say.
Coffee, donuts, warehouse.
That massage, a little shoulder massage would be nice, because
that's a deputy chief job right there.
It's kind of one of those things that handwriting things. That's difficult because anymore, how do you handwrite things?
So, well, let's see what Sally has to say.
Sally, what do you think?
Well, Barbara pretty much said it all. The only thing as far as constructively I could say is maybe letting us know it's a little earlier or as early as possible when we're needed. And that's the only thing constructively I can think of as far as making it better. But, you know, Barbara pretty much summed it up, and I feel as she does.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you. It. I have a couple questions for you. On police involvement in the community, the trucks in the Duwamish area.
Mm-hmm.
People have been sending me pictures and telling me that there's a lot of trucks going off route, cutting through the neighborhood. And is there a plan in place to be addressing that? What's being done regarding that?
The blunt answer is no. There is not a plan in place formally. It's informal. As it relates to making sure the patrol officers who patrol that district are aware of the issue, making sure our traffic officer is aware of that particular issue. And I say traffic officer because right now I only have one traffic officer who's working only part-time. The other half of the time he's helping out our major crimes unit where our other traffic officers are because of our staffing issue right now. So, getting back to the staffing optimism of as we come into the new year here, starting to backfill our specialty positions. Traffic is one of those positions we need to look at as we start prioritizing so that we can address these specific issues. So as we have traffic officers that are working the district, they will be spending time in Allentown, the Duwamish area. We had a traffic officer who unfortunately is on leave right now, but before he went on leave, he was focusing on that particular area where he had written tickets for cars going the wrong way over the 42nd Avenue Bridge, as well as some speeding tickets there on 42nd. So we're addressing it informally as we can, recognizing that there is an issue. It's trying to allocate resources to it when we have other areas as well that we're trying to do more with less. That being said, it does look like we're going to have the staffing to be able to respond as we get to the beginning of the year. In the meantime, it's more of a touch and go, hit it when we can, in order to be able to address their specific concerns.
Do you think they will hear that and think nothing's going to change between now and spring?
They have heard that. I went to the last Duwamish meeting last month.
The Allentown
meeting.
You get another one tomorrow.
Well, we will see what we can do to get somebody there.
Okay.
But
there's not.
Not tomorrow. Probably next week.
Every other month now, isn't it?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I think their next one's in November.
It is.
Sally?
Yeah, it's in November. There's not one tomorrow. I can get you the date.
Okay, well, all right. So I won't be down there tomorrow then.
Okay. Unless you're going to Sally's house.
Okay. We did present, you know, for them, one of the other things related to the trucks that is formalized and moving forward is we were able to finally work out everything with the vendor for the automated speed zone cameras, which are going to go in at Cathedral Park there. So the vendor is now actively looking to do its logistics behind making the installation happen, as well as we did present that to the Allentown group last month when we met to that.
Okay. So, you know, certainly people are then sending messages to us, pictures, trucks are just dissecting the community down there, both Duwamish and Allentown. And I'd like to be able to give them some assurance that we're we hear that and we're trying to do something about it, as opposed to we can't do much till spring. And I don't know what that answer is, but.
So the answer is a hybrid approach of trying to provide resources when we can, until we actually have a dedicated resource where we can address it. One of the things we did with our leadership team meeting last month at the end of the quarter was to identify priorities and being able to address these traffic issues, because it's not just Allentown. That came up on as one of the priorities.
Yeah, and I've got a resident on 42nd, just about a block north of Highline or of Foster High School, who says trucks are parking up there on the street. It makes it hard to see to pull out of your driveway. And she, one, thinks that they shouldn't be able to park there. I don't know if legally they can or not. They can't. So no. It's happening. And she's very frustrated with it and wonders what can be done.
To that extent, we do have a part-time, so half our PSO, our support officer, we have commissioned him for part-time being able to do parking enforcement, so we can add that to his rounds. This was the first I've heard of truck parking issue. That doesn't mean he hasn't been hitting it when he sees it, but now that I'm aware of it, I can point him in that direction and see what we can do to address that.
And that's a part-time officer?
Yes.
Okay. Would you mind giving this a resident a call if I give you her information?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't think I have any more questions. I guess I am curious about the volume of badges. Does this happen all the time? Weekly or is it just...
No. This is we're trying it out and see what kind of response we get. And that was the day it was 105 degrees out. So
it's just periodically do it.
It was just the first time.
Oh.
I mean, I know back in the day we've had some events where the police play basketball, but I know that one of our officers is in contact with the coach of the Foster High School basketball team, and they're trying to set up some sort of mentoring program with the high school team, and we're going to play them. So we'll see how good they really are.
Yeah. All right.
Very cool.
Let you know, Tom, that the meeting in November is not the fourth Tuesday as usual because that's Thanksgiving week and it's a different date. It's about the middle of the month somewhere. I don't have the specific date, but just so you're aware.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this item was for discussion only, so we'll wrap this one up. We'll move to miscellaneous. I don't have any. Then this meeting is adjourned.